Today's daf in Masechet Gittin is daf Nun Aleph, and we are holding at the last piece of the Mishnah in the Gemara, which is Ein Motziin Leachilat Perot or Leshevach Karkaot and Leachilat from Nechasim Mishu'ubadim, and this was the last Tikkun Olam that was mentioned in the Mishnah. And the question is, what precisely do we mean by this Tikkun Olam? What is the reason that we're so choshish to allow anybody to collect for these things? Now remember what these things are. The Shevach Karkaot, Perot and Shevach Karkaot, are a reference to a case where somebody sells a field to someone else, and it turns out that the field had been stolen. And since he sold that field with Achrayut, he is responsible not only to give him his money back, but the thing is that if the person had made investments in that field, so when the field is taken away, he's obviously now going to sue for any payroll that were taken away, money that was put in for improvements. That is considered to be unrecoverable, unless you have money to pay it. So if the guy is coming, he can't take it out of a field that you sold to someone else. Why is that? My time, I ask the Gemara. The point is that when you buy a field, obviously there is no way for there to be a shtar about. And since there is no shtar, and it's not written, I have no way to get title insurance on the field that I am buying, you see, because I don't know what's coming in. Nobody can trace what's coming in. This is like a weird kind of out-of-left-field lawsuit in which, because someone else invested money, you're going to have to pay back that money, and I have no way of knowing about that. So anything that is not written down in a shtar, it's like a milval peh, and a milval peh, you cannot be gova from the chasim shubadim. Omar le Reb Abba le Ula, what kind of explanation is that? I mean, what about the other cases in the Mishnah? It says that you cannot collect from a zona isha v'habanot. So there, if the husband dies, his almana, as long as she doesn't get her ktuva, tovat her ktuva, is supported off of the estate. And the same thing is true of his daughters and so on. And he's guaranteeing them all types of support, if you recall from the Gemara Ketuvot. Now, those things don't have to be written down because everybody knows about them. I mean, so for all intents and purposes, since it's a Tznai Beit Din, it's Gemandik Tivig Dami, and therefore it should be that we would be able to be Motzi from the Lekuchot. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says that ein motziin, the katani ein motziin. You're giving me a logical reason that they're ein motziin because nobody has a way of knowing. That's ridiculous. I mean, there's nothing that is better known than that. How do you explain it? Says Ula, Omar Leisa, Ula, says to Rabbi Abba, that's different. Because that particular case, hata mikora hochi itkun, ketuvin en etzel b'nei chorin, but in ketuvin en etzel mishu'ubadim. Basically, the Rabbanan initially made a takana to protect buyers from these types of things. And they were afraid that if they would allow the wives or children who have these guaranteed support to go ahead and to sue someone who bought a piece of property and be able to take the property away from him, that would destroy the property market. Because it would mean whenever a guy is married and has a family, nobody's going to want to buy his karkaot because there's no telling what kind of future suits may be brought against him. And because of that, initially, when Beis Din made the takana that a ktuva includes mazona isha v'habanot, they specifically defined it as a Tanai Beit Din that is collectible from only B'nai Chorin and not from Mishu Ubadim. So it was built into the original Takana. We didn't need to make a special B'nai Tikkun Olam on that. V'chein amar Rav Asi amar Rav Yochanan, the reason we're not go v'shevach peros, shevach peros from the chazim b'shubadim is because l'fisha einam ketuvim. And they asked the same question to him, Omer Rabbi Zera l'Rav Asi, what about the other case of the mazon ha'isha and habanot, where that is known and it's as if it's ketuvim? And nonetheless, the Mishnah says ein motzi'in. And Rav Asi answered to Rabbi Zera exactly the same answer that Ula just answered to Rav Abba, namely, the original Tznai Beit Din that offers the dinim of Mazon Le'isha V'Labonis specified that those charges can only be sued against money or property that belongs to the deceased. But anything that would require exercising a lien against property that had been sold, they are not considered to be ketuvim etzel mishubadim. Another explanation, which does not take into consideration, apparently, the question of whether it's considered to be ketuv or not, is Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina says, Lefisha ein ketuvim. People can only protect themselves against known amounts. So let's say, even if I'm able to find out about something, and it is ketuv, but you're not helping anything by saying that it's ketuv, because I am not prepared to subject myself and my investments to an unknown amount of money that is owed by the person I bought from, and at some point in the future could turn out to be so much that it'll take away my investment in this purchase. So therefore, it isn't good enough for me to be able to protect myself by knowledge. I need to have a knowledge of how much. If I can't know how much, why would I buy a piece of property? Therefore, ketuvim is the important point, says Rabbi Chanina. If there's a clear-cut amount which I can make a financial analysis and I can decide whether it's worth my while to make this investment, what are the chances of my getting a suit against me, against this property? So I can sit there and I can talk to an accountant and I can figure out how much this guy owes, how many properties he still has, even if he sells me this one, and then I'll be able to make an intelligent investment. But if I don't know how much is due, I can't make an intelligent investment. Therefore, says Rabbi Chanina, any amount that isn't known up front and can turn into this massive payment that's going to be sued against me, I'm not responsible for if I buy a sada. Because otherwise, I'm not going to buy, and that will destroy the real estate market, and that's the Tikkun HaOlam. Now, the question is, Rabbi Chanina, notice, did not mention the question of whether it has to be written down at all. He only said, because it's not ketuv. That's all he mentioned. But does that mean that he doesn't even care about whether it's written down? In other words, to him, title insurance, so to speak, is something that you can go out and find out about, even if it's not written in a shtar. But the only thing that the Chachamim cared about was that you have to be able to find out precisely how much money is going to be brought in a suit against you. Or did Rabbi Chanina take for granted, well, obviously it has to be written down. It's just that it won't help to write it down if it isn't well defined. So he boilo. L'Rabbi Chanina ketuvim uketuvim boy. Did Rabbi Chanina require both elements, that it needs to be written down in a shtar, and it also needs to be a specific amount? Or does he feel that the only thing that's important is that it should be katsuf? Now here we have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what that means. Does that mean that it would include even a milva alpeh? So in other words, this is how Rashi understands. A guy makes a loan, And he doesn't put it in the contract at all. So Rashi says, okay, but it's a $100,000 loan. So it would be katsuv. And if it's katsuv, then the guy is covered because he knows how much to take into consideration. Tosfos says that's not true. Obviously, we're not questioning whether there's the essential difference between a milva bishtar and a milva balpeh, because a milva is a very specific case. People do not borrow money befarhesia. They're not. It's not the kind of thing you want to go around letting everybody know about, that you needed to take a loan. So how is a buyer supposed to protect himself if there's no contract? If there's a contract, then by definition, the item on the contract are creating a kol. Every contract creates a kol. But if there's no contract, how would Rabbi Hanina say that a person is able to protect himself just because the amount of the loan is known? The loan itself isn't known. Therefore, says Tosfos, we're not questioning whether there's that fundamental difference between milva alpeh and milva bishtar. Of course there is. What we're questioning over here is other things that you may owe money for, not loans. So those kind of things that take place in public and nonetheless are not written down in a shtar. So maybe those kind of, let's say a guy gets married, we're going to have a case coming up, a guy gets married to a woman who has a daughter from another husband. So he makes a condition with her, you know, I'm going to be supporting your daughter for the next 5 years, and so on. Okay, so everybody knows about it. So it's public. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. So it's not written down in a contract, but nonetheless, a buyer knows that it's there. But certainly where something is done, but Sina, how could we think that Rabbi Hanina would say, well, that doesn't matter? Okay, so now, however we understand the question so far stands. Does Rabbi Hanina hold only Ketsuvim is important, or does it need to also be in a shtar? So, Toshma, let's see if we can bring a proof to this, the Yitzman. Misha meit v'niach shtei banot ubein. A guy dies, and he has three children, two daughters and one son. Now, you will remember that a daughter who gets married automatically takes 10% of the estate. Okay, so the first daughter goes in and gets married, takes 10% of the estate, natla yisur nechasim, and the second daughter did not have a chance yet to get married, lo yispika shnia ligbot, and before she gets married, the son dies. Now, if that happens and that son himself did not have any heirs, then who are the current heirs? The daughters, right? So now those two daughters inherit the entire property. The question is whether daughter number two can sue daughter number one to recover her 10%. Because she says, look, I never got a chance to get 10%. You took out 10% from the estate. Let's not split what's left evenly. Let's split the first 10% that you took too. Because otherwise, I mean, it's very unfair. So what's the halacha over there? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, the halacha is that Shnia Vitra. The second daughter lost her zechut because the whole point is that since we insist that there be money available to pay for a wedding, no matter what is going on with the rest of the heirs, that any daughter automatically takes straight 10% off of the estate, that is not part of the actual Yerusha. And since the Takana was made to make sure that a woman would be able to have enough money to set herself up in life, once she becomes an heiress on the very money that had been set aside, the takana is irrelevant. So the takana played its role for daughter number one, and what's left is left for the two. Now, so far this has nothing to do with us, but here's where it gets interesting. Rabbi Hanina does not like that psak. And Rabbi Hanina says, look, Gedola mizu amru. We find a much bigger chiddush in the right of a daughter to a nadunya, and that is motziin leparnasa. We are able to actually take money for that daughter from buyers from the nadunya. So, in other words, any nechasim that the son had inherited and had sold, and now the daughter wants to go and get money, and the son says, well, I already sold the property of the estate. The din is too bad on the buyer. And the daughter can now go and sue the buyer for her 10% of the estate from 5 years ago when the father had died. And now she's grown up. But we will not be motzi for mizonot. So that means that the parnasah is such a powerful issue that even though we're not motzi for anything else from Mishubadim, we will be motzi for parnasah. So for heaven's sake, if she can sue a prior buyer, why could she not be able to recover her 10% from a prior 10%er, from her sister? That's not fair. It doesn't make any sense. But meanwhile, what did we see? And so he's saying, you, Rabbi Yochanan, at amret, shnia vitra. That's the case. How could Rabbi Yochanan say such a thing? Now, the problem is, of course, it's a raya here. Because, look, Rabbi Hanina, we wanted to know whether you need to have the din of katuv, or all we need to have is katsuf. Well, here's a case. Parnasa is 10% off the top. And therefore, any accountant can tell you how much you've got to worry about, right? Okay, so it's a davar katsuf. Is it written anywhere? No, it's not written. Mikhtav lo ktiva. And Rabbi Hanina is saying, as a simple statement, that obviously you will be motzi for parnasa because it's katsuv, and you will not be motzi for mizonot because they're not ketsuvim. So you see that Rabbi Hanina does not require ketiva. Says the Gemara, that's silly. I mean, everybody knows parnasa is different, because parnasa doesn't have to be written in a shtar. Anything which is a tnai bezdin, and the woman and the man has children, any buyer would have to be a total idiot not to be aware of the fact that he's got to look out for the problem of the 10% that's going to be due. And why did he buy the field? Obviously, we're not talking about a case where it means literally written in the shtar. I mean, it doesn't have to be there. If it's a tnai bezdin, it's the equivalent of being written. So shiny parnasak, even itle kala, everybody knows about it. It's as if it were written in a shtar. It's easy to find out. So you just hire a private investigator. You look it up on Google, and you know exactly how much money would be due in terms of Ms. Parnasa. Now, Ula said before that we're not motzin lachilat peirot because it's not written down. Moti revuna bar manoach. The fact is that in a case where a guy, we had these cases back before in Ketuvot, a guy makes a commitment to his new wife who has a daughter from a previous marriage, and he's going to be taking care of her daughter for the next 5 years. That in such a case where you made such an agreement, own daughter can only collect for the chasim b'nei chrein, but he, her daughter, is in a better position than his own daughter. Because the other daughter, the wife's daughter, can collect even from the chasim mishubadim, because she is a baalat chov. She's not coming to collect because of the din of mizonot ha'isha v'abanot, who can only collect from the chasim b'nei chorin. She is coming because he made an agreement. And that's like any other chov. And that exactly was the case that Tosfos had used earlier when he wanted to know what the din would be aliba the Rebbe Chanina when it's not written down. So it's mufursam, but it's not written down. So that's exactly the case we want to know about. And it says, beferush, that even though it's not written down, but since it's a 5-year debt, that we do take it out of nechasim b'shubadim. So you see that we do not require that it should be written. So the idea over here is that you were saying before that it has to do with Enam Ktuvim, Ula. Here it's not Ktuvim at all. and yet we're collecting. How do you explain that? Ula says that in a case where the husband made a kinyan at the time that he was getting married, that he is going to take care of her daughter for 5 years, that is considered to be the equivalent of writing a contract on it. I don't understand, but it, what's that?
It's an arbitrary time span.
There's no chiyuv. He did this as a personal agreement with her. So now the question is, we have a very strange situation here because we're comparing his own daughters who don't have the right to go ahead and to collect to his wife's daughter who does have the right to collect. And we're answering that the reason that his wife's daughter has a right to collect is because he made a kinyan. But if that's the case, obviously we'd have to make a comparison in two cases which are similar. So then that would mean that we had to have made a kinyan even for his own daughters. Otherwise, it's an unfair comparison. So why doesn't the kinyan help, according to Ula, if the issue has nothing to do with katsuf? According to Ula, the issue has to do with katuv, and you're telling me that a kinyan is the equivalent of katuv, then why do his own daughters not collect from Meshu'ubadim, Ula? How do you explain that? Answers Ula, well, he only made the kinyan for his wife's daughter, and he did not make the kinyan for his own daughters. What? Says the Gemara. Mishkon lezu, v'lokon lezu. What? My Pascha? I don't understand. You can't arbitrarily split a case down the middle and then pretend you're comparing two things. Supposedly, we are talking about the difference in the din between a case of his own daughter and a case of his wife's daughter. And you're telling me, well, it doesn't really have anything to do with the fact that it's his daughter, his wife's daughter. It has to do with the question of whether he was Kohen. I mean, that's absurd. You could have had the case say exactly the opposite. Only his own daughters collect. His wife's daughter doesn't collect. He was credited to this one and not to that one. It's ridiculous. Answers Ula, no. Obviously, it's not arbitrarily Pascha. There's a reason. He was Kona for everyone. But the Kenyan for his own daughters is irrelevant because he doesn't have those daughters yet. And therefore would be the equivalent of giving Maknet Davar to someone who is Lo Bali Olam, right? And we say, even Rabbi Meir, who also can be Maknet something that's Lo Bali Olam, agrees that you cannot make a Kinyan to a person that isn't born yet. So he made a Kinyan, fine. Yes, he made a Kinyan on the whole agreement. His own daughters, her daughters, but her daughters existed at the time from her previous marriage. Therefore, the kinyan was chal and made it the equivalent of katuf. But his daughters did not exist, and therefore the kinyan didn't do anything. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, it was lo katuf. So let's see this inside. But ishto da'avi b'shata kinyan, ma'ani la'kinyan. His wife's daughter, who was born already at the time of the kinyan, then the kinyan is effective. But his own daughter, who hadn't yet been born, you can't make a kinyan in those circumstances. Says the Gemara, listen, that is just as ridiculous. Because obviously, if you want to make a comparison between his daughter and her daughter, you're going to have to make a comparison where both daughters were ba'olam, and where you made a kinyan to both daughters. So obviously we'd have to be talking about a case where he was remarrying this woman, right? See, he already had daughters. That's the point. And he had been begarish her. Now he's remarrying her. Now she has daughters from a marriage before his first marriage to another guy. And he has daughters from his first marriage to her. And now we've got his daughters and her daughters, and we're making a kinyan. Now, will you please tell me, Ula, what the difference is? Because you can't get away with saying, well, it just so happens his daughters weren't born. We have to talk about a similar case if you're going to make a comparison. So, Milo Eskinad Avitar Vayu Bishat Kinyan. Don't both have to be extant when he makes this kinyan? What would be the case? Ve'echidami de gar shaveadrea. He had divorced her, and now he remarried her, and nonetheless, we're making this distinction. So obviously, this distinction cannot be the question of whether it's katuv or not, because in this case, you're claiming kinyan is the equivalent of katuv, and both of them are ketuvim. So now, what is the difference, according to Ula, between Bito and Batishto? Ella, okay, I'll tell you the differences. Bito is going to be given her parnasa and her food, whether or not he makes the kinyan, right? Because it's a tnai beit din. Every ketuvah includes the unwritten clause that he is responsible to take care of any of their daughters. So since she is eating b'tnai beit din ka'achla lo mahani la kinyan, the kinyan doesn't achieve anything. Whereas bat ishto, where the kinyan is the source of the entire chiyuv, where she's not eating b'tnai beit din, so then mahani la kinyan. Says, well, what kind of crazy svara is that? I understand you don't make things worse because it's tnai beit din. So now because it's tnai beit din, I can't make a kinyan to be machayev myself that it should be meshubadim. What? Migra gara? You're telling me I made it worse because she happens to be in a better position. So now it's worse if I make a kinyan? It makes no sense. Well, okay. You're right. But I'll tell you what the difference is. The difference is like this. The daughter was going to be eating anyway b'tnai beit din, right? See, he's mechuyev on the basis of a tnai beit din. Since he knows that this is part of his essential chiyuvim in the ketuvah, over there we are cheshesh that emar tzrori atfasa. It's possible that for the purposes of ensuring that the mizonot of the daughters would be taken care of, since he sees this as a fundamental chiyuv that comes from Bezdin, and it's not an arbitrary commitment that he made with a kinyan, he may have given some keys to safe deposit boxes to these daughters, or to his wife for these daughters, to make certain that the money was available before he died. And therefore, since we have no way of proving that, we cannot collect from the Mishu'ubadim. We can only collect from what he has allowed us to collect from, which are B'nai Chorin. But because we have the Cheshash of Tzori and no way of disproving it, the buyer of the field is not subject to the suit. And that's the point. That he would not have done for Batishto.
It means it's practically a non-dinner for
Chosh
to that degree.
What?
This is what people will do, right?
Yeah, it's very possible. That's why. Yeah. Toshma. Okay, so now we have two reasons before. Right? So far we have Ula and we have Rebbe Chanina. Either because it's not written, according to Ula, or because it's not katsuf, according to Rebbe Chanina. But the thing is that in the Braita, we find a completely different reason. Toshma, Amar Rabbi Natan, Ematai, when do we say our Mishnah that you're not able to be motzi from the Chosim Mishubodim for Peres, Chilas Peres, Shavach HaKa'ot, and so on? That's only Bizman Shekadam Mikhoshel HaSheni L'Kivchoshel HaRishon. What happened over here is that the second buyer, he went ahead and he bought before the whole suit on the Brooklyn Bridge sale came about. And the person who was investing his money in the Brooklyn Bridge, which obviously didn't really belong to him, but which he was fooled into thinking belonged to him, he had not yet made his investments. And therefore, when the second guy buys a field, he may be advised of the fact that there's going to be a suit against this person to recover that field, but he has no idea that there was any such debt. It didn't exist at that time. And if it didn't exist, it doesn't create a shibud. But if kodam shivchosha rishonim mikhosha sheni, if at the time that the second buyer comes along, There was already the potential for this suit because he had already invested money in the perot and the sprinkler system and so on. So then, in fact, he would be able to recover that money from the nechasim mishubadim. The first buyer would be able to recover his investment, and he would get it back from the nechasim mishubadim, meaning from the second buyer. Now, this statement in the Braita of Rabbi Natan goes against everything that we just learned, because it is neither katuv nor katsuv, and therefore, according to Ula and Rabbi Hanina, there should be no way to recoup this money from the next guy's field. And yet, Rabbi Natan says, you can. So obviously, both Ula and Rabbi Hanina are giving us the wrong reason. The only reason has to do with the timing. Is the debt existent at that time? When he buys a second field, then he's going to have to pay. If not, not. Okay. Well, says Rabbi. But that isn't the reason that was given by Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina says the reason that Shimon isn't responsible is because of the fact that he had no contract on those things. That was Ula's reason. There's no contract. How's he supposed to know about this? He went to title insurance. There was no legal contract about money coming, a suit being brought against Reuven because of peirot and because of investments that somebody had made. Yisachar. Now, where's that written in a contract? So how am I supposed to protect myself? And therefore, according to Ula, that's the reason you cannot recoup the money from the buyer of the second field, Shimon, right? So the Rabbi Natan's Braita says that Ula is wrong. Rabbi Hanina is saying the reason you could not collect the money out of Shimon is because how would you ever know how much it is? It's not a question of whether it's written in a contract. It's that it's open-ended. How can you allow an open-ended suit? Obviously, then Shimon, who comes along, finds out that this is going on, says, well, I'm not going to buy any field from this guy. You're crazy. Maybe there's an, oh, he may be sued for millions. How do I know how much money was going to be in? So I have no way of protecting myself. Rabbi Natan says that's wrong. Rabbi Natan says it's only a question of whether the debt existed at the time of the purchase of Shimon, and that's the only consideration. Therefore, as to Gemara Alma, Mishum de lo kodimu. You see, the only thing we need to take into consideration is the timing, not whether it's written and not whether it's kotsuv. So how do you explain that? Answers the Gemara, the only way I can explain it is by finding other tanoim, obviously, that would allow Ula and Rabbi Hanina, who are amoraim, to argue with this braita, which is Rabbi Natan, which is tanoim, the tanya. Who are the other Tanoim? Tanoi, the Tanya. Ein motziin la'achilat peirot u'leshevach karkaot u'lemazon ha'isha v'habanot minuchasim mishu'ubadim mipnei tikun ha'olam. And what is that tikun ha'olam? Lefi she'ein ketuvim. Because they're not written. Okay, so here is a Tana who says exactly what Ula said. It's not written. That's the point. Comes along Rabbi Yossi and says, "V'chimatikun olam yesh bezu." Why do you call that mipnei tikun olam? It's because halo ein kitzuvim, which is Rabbi Hanina's opinion. So we find here two tanoim, one like Ula, one like Rabbi Hanina, which means that we have three opinions. One opinion is the problem is there's no contract. One opinion is the problem is there is no clear-cut amount that I have to be able to take into consideration in my financial planning. And one opinion is it's something that hasn't taken place yet. So one is Ula, one is Rabbi Hanina, and one is Rabbi Natan, respectively. Now, the only thing that remains for us to explain here is this funny language of Rabbi Yossi. V'chima tikun olam yesh bezu. What is that supposed to mean? Rashi says a very funny pshat. He says that's not called Tikkun Olam. Why is it not called Tikkun Olam? Says Rashi. Well, because after all, without Tikkun Olam, you can't be goveh from the Chosim Mishubadim because they have no kitzvah. So why would you say that the issue would be the ketuvim is the Tikkun Olam? Now Tosfos says that's crazy. If Rabbi Hanina himself defined the Tikkun Olam in order to protect buyers and therefore to allow people to engage in business with real estate, and his explanation of what the Tikkun Olam was, Mipnei She'enam Ketuvim, because people have to know how much money is involved to be able to make a cogent analysis, right? And Rabbi Hanina called that Tikkun Olam. It's ridiculous for Rabbi Yossi to say, what? That you call Tikkun Olam? That's not called Tikkun Olam. He said, but what is that supposed to mean? Therefore, Tosra says, the point is like this. You're saying that Tikkun Olam is in terms of the Ketivah. What kind of Tikkun Olam is Ketivah? And if you would write it down, you think you've fixed the world? You haven't achieved anything. Because even if it were written down, who the heck is going to be able to buy a field when the amount is open-ended? Therefore, if you want to talk about the Tikkun Olam, talk about the underlying issue of Tikkun Olam. And that is, wherever something is not katsuf, I don't care if it's written down. And I don't care when it happened. The only issue is, people, in order to be able to engage in a normal market of real estate, need to have the facts available to make financial analysis. You can't have open-ended amounts. And that's the Tikkun Olam. So where it's not katsuf, it's automatically not collectible from Meshubadim. And the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was the world's first Good Samaritan law. And of course, we don't really mean Good Samaritan. It's just a Christian reference. As we know, we don't really like those Samaritans too much. Hakonem in Hakuti, etc., etc. So the case is, somebody gives back a wallet, and the guy says, what? I had $100 in the wallet, and I found only 10. And therefore, you have to swear because you're a meida b'miktzas. You know? I mean, that's horrible. So we make a takkanah, you don't have to swear. Now here we have a very strange mimer of Rabbi Yitzchak. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, if a guy comes along and he says, hey, I had two wallets tied to each other, or two purses tied to each other, and you only gave me one. And the guy says, well, that's all I found. Lo matzati ela echad. The guy has to swear because he's a motive of mixas. This person says, you owed me two, and he admits that I owed you one, and I gave you back that one. He has to swear. But if the guy says, hey, I had two oxen that were connected to one another, and you only gave me one. And this guy says, but I only found one. Then he does not have to swear. Why is this my taima? Well, that's because shvarim menatchem mi'adadi. It's very logical that despite the fact that you left the two shvarim, that they were tied to each other, I mean, these shvarim are pulling against each other and undoubtedly could have dislodged whatever you had tied them with, and therefore your taina is not a taina. You don't have a taina's vada. You were saying, maybe my shvarim were still attached, new. Because of that, a guy doesn't have to take a shvua. But kisin, where you're saying, I know for a fact that they were attached in a way they wouldn't have come apart unless you disconnected them. So kisin lo menatche me'adari. So therefore, on the taina against the kisim, against those wallets, it's a ta'anat vadai. And a ta'anat vadai creates a situation of moda b'miktzat. Now, it's also possible that there would be a motive of mikzas on the case of the animals as well. For instance, if the guy says, Shnei shvarim kshurim matzata, you found two shvarim, and now you're only giving me one. And the guy says, yes, what's the matter with you, you nut? I found two shvarim, yesterday I brought you one, and today I'm bringing you back the other one. That is a case of motive of mikzas, where it says, Hichzarti lecha achad mehem, then he does have to be nishba. Now this is very strange to ask the Gemara. Doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak hold of our takana in the Mishnah? Let lehamotzei mitziah lo yishava mipnei tikkun olam? Doesn't he hold of the tikkun olam? Because otherwise, who in his right mind would ever give back an aveda if he could be sued for giving back the aveda? So how do we explain this? Answers the Gemara, Rabbi Yitzchak was going like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that in a case where there is a tainas avadai, that is not considered to be a meshiv aveda. Because Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says that some learn that the issue over here is, you'll notice that it doesn't say that the guy returned something. It says the guy said, hey, shnei kisin kishurim matzata li. And the other guy at that point says, lo matzati ela echad. So many Rishonim learned that the point is that the owner of the wallets sees the wallet in the guy's hand. And he says to them, hey, that's my wallet. And the guy says, yeah, I found this wallet. I was hoping the owner would come along. Yeah, but there were two wallets. So in this case, we're not talking bichlal about a good Samaritan. We're talking about a guy who himself is the Toveya. Not that he's Toveya after all, something else. But Rashi seems to simply learn that the difference is the Ta'anat Vadai. I'm telling you that this is the way in which it was. And Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov holds that in a case of a Ta'anat Vadai, you're not called a Meshiv Aveda. You're called a responder to a Tviyah. And on that, there's a halacha of motive and mikzatz. And you have to be nishba, detanya. Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, it is possible for you to have to take a shvua of a motive and mikzatz against yourself. What? Yes. Parmim shadam nishba ta'anat atzmo. How is that possible? Ketzat. He says to somebody, mone la avicha biyadi. I borrowed $100 from your father who had died. And this son knows nothing about it. I borrowed $100 and I gave him back over the course of the years 50 and I still owe you 50. Then I raise a nishba. Then the son says, well, if you admit that it was $100, how do I know you're telling me the truth about the 50? So such a case is zeh nishba al ta'anat atzmo. We're considering this to be a ta'anat vadai, because there's no better ta'anat vadai than when the person admits it. So he's the one who's saying there was a $100 loan. Okay, it was a $100 loan. So then you have to be nishba. The chachomim say even though it was a ta'anat vadai, it's still included in the rubric of meshiv aveda, and our eino elok meshiv aveda, and it's patur. Now we asked on Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, why doesn't Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov hold that a meshiv aveda is patur because of the Good Samaritan law in our Mishnah? So if Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov letle meshiva aveda is patur because of tikkun olam, or my Rav, actually Rabbi Eliezer is made that if there was no tviyah, then it would be a nishba and not nishba because it would be a true meshiva aveda. When he said adam nishba ta'anat atzmo, what he means is that somebody was being toveya him. But the one that was being toveya was a katan. So he was a young son, and a young son is not considered to be a tfiyah. And he said, so, a katan, you're right, is not a tviya. So you're back to Meshiva Veda. I don't have to respond to a katan. Katan, mide mishashe yidbe. You're not answering anything by saying that. Because it's a ferish of Mishnah, Mesechet Shavuot, ein nishba'in alta, not cherishot of a katan. So you don't even have to respond. So I don't understand. No. I said katan, but I mean gadol. But the reason I call him a katan is because of what we learned yesterday. That a gadol begabe mile de aviv, am I called a katan? Because the gabe mile de aviv is called a katan. Since he really doesn't know what's going on in his father's life. So his tviya is the equivalent of a tviya of somebody who doesn't know. Oh, come on, Rav. But if that's the case, then why did Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say, "Pamim nishbal tanat atzmo"? This is not tanat atzmo. This is tanat achirim. He's responding to the ben agadol of the person that had the son of the person that had taken the loan. Answers the Gemara: it is tanat achirim. But since he himself was made that it took place, so therefore. He's calling it Tanat Atzmo. That is insane, says the Gemara. Every motive of Mixas is that way. Every motive of Mixas is Kulo Tainata. Is a guy Tainas and he's made of a Mixas. I don't understand what you're saying. So Kulo Tainita Nami Tanat Achirim Vodat Atzmo Nino by definition. So you're still not explaining a word of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Answers the Gemara that the point is that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is talking about that he really was a katan, and like Rav had said initially, that's what was meant. Rav didn't play games with us. The machlokus was in the principle of Rabba, whether you're chayav shvua between Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbanan in Rabba's far. Rabba gave the classic explanation of the din of Beit HaMikdash. And he said, the way to understand, and therefore to apply the halacha, to see whether it's applicable, is the reason that we have this strange halacha of a meida b'miktas, is because the person who is being meida finds himself in a very tough position. He doesn't have the money to repay right now. And he doesn't want Hotza'a Lapol to come in and take away his new TV that he shouldn't have bought. So basically, he doesn't want to walk away without paying the loan. He just wants to put it off until he gets a salary check next month. And of course, this guy wants his money today. On the other hand, he doesn't have the guts to deny in the man's face that the loan exists. So he takes a middle way. He says, no, of course, it's true. Yes, but I'm sure that you're making a mistake in the amount. And then when he gets his salary check 2 weeks later, he says, oh my gosh, I just remembered, you're absolutely right. Here's the rest of the money. So that's basically a psychological analysis that the Torah has made, that actually, the guy has no ability to have such chutzpah to deny a loan from somebody who made him a loan. So the truth is, he would not want to pay anything right now. He would like to tell him right now that he's not chayev, but he can't. He's stuck with his own psychology. And the truth is, psychologically, of course, he would like to pay the guy back right now. He wants to give him the money back. The only reason he's not giving the money back right now is because he's trying to put off the payment date. And thinking to himself, when I get my next salary check, I'll have money, then I can pay him. Therefore comes along the Torah to say, Rami Shvua Iluya, add to the pressure. If you add to the pressure with the Shvua, this way he'll have to give in and let you take his TV. So, because knowing this psychology, there is no reason for the lender to have to lose out. But we're certainly not chayshit that the guy intended to steal the money. Now, what does the rabbi have to do with it? The machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Rabbanan is how to apply rabbah. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar, this logic applies whether it's the guy himself who made the loan or the son of the guy who made the loan. The person is a no meis. He would not have the guts to say it never happened. Therefore, he's not called a meishiva veda. If the son comes and says to him, didn't my father lend you money? And he says yes. He's not a good Samaritan. He is a victim of his own conscience. Terrible thing, that conscience thing. So he's a victim of his own conscience. He does not have the guts to be able to say, even though it's the guy's son, to be able to say, nah, never got anything from your dad. So lo shna ba, lo shna b'no, eno me'iz, ve'okach lafkeme shiva veda. Whereas Rabbanan Savri, it's only bo de eno me'iz. The whole psychology would only be active against the actual lender. But as far as the son of the lender is concerned, avo bivno, me'iz. Since in this case he was not me'iz, and he says, yes, it's really true, I do owe money to your father, he's considered to be a meshiva veda. And that's what the machlokas is dependent in. Ein motzin lachilat pirot, my taima amar ulam resh lakesh, lefi she'en ketuvim. Omle rababa l'ula, well, what about mazonei shava banot, which are tznai betin, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, they're kemandichtiv idami. And it says, ein motzin, amar le, because that's the ikar takana. Hatami kora hachi atkun. They are ketuvim, but only etzel b'nei chorin. And tonight, the whole thing doesn't exist. Etzel mishu'ubadim. V'chein om Rav Asi, om Rav Yochanan, lefish ein ketuvim. And Rabbi Zera said to him, what about mazona ishava banod? The kabbatik tividom. And he gave the same answer Ula gave. Ein motzin, v'katani motzin, om le, mi kora hachi atkun. Ketuvimein etzel b'nei chorin. V'ein ketuvimein etzel mishu'ubadim. So that's reason one. Rabbi Chanina takes another approach. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Lefisha in Kitsuvim. Did Rabbi Chanina mean, Rabbi Chanina means Kitsuvim and takes for granted Ketuvim, or he means only Kitsuvim? So Odilma Kitsuvim, even if they would be Ketuvim, they wouldn't be Ketuvim. Toshma, the Itmar Misha made, Vinir Shteba no to Ben. The Kadma, the Bat HaRishona, went and not like Yisro the Chasim for her marriage, and the second one didn't get married yet, and the son dies. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the second one loses, she is Mevateret on her 10%. The Yomer, like Rabbi Chinin, how could you say that? Gedola Mizo Amru, that we're Motziin LeParnasa, and we're not Motziin LeMizonot. Va'at Amr Chnia Vitra. So she'd certainly be able to recover it if we can be motzi. But parnasa, which is miketz kaitza, but it doesn't appear in any contract, and she's being motzi. See, Rabbi Chanina doesn't require written. No, shiny parnasa, kivadit leikala, it's as if it's in a contract. So it's kamandik tiva dami. What did Ravuna bar Manoach? Meitu benotehem themselves are only nizonos benachasim b'nei chorin. But this daughter, who is the daughter of the wife, she's nizonet minachasim b'shu'ubadim, because she's coming as a balat chov. Yeah, but that's talking about a case where it was kanu miyado, so it's as if it's ketuvim. Iachi banot nami, should be talking about b'ke kanu. Yeah, but kanu lezu v'lo kanu lezu. What? What, arbitrarily, pascha? No, bat ishto, who exists b'shat kinyan, ma'ani la kinyan. Bito, who isn't there yet b'shat kinyan, lo ma'ani la kinyan. I don't understand. Why isn't she there? Milo askinan David Tarvayo b'shat kinyan, the case would be the girsha, the ahadra. Okay, try another approach. Bito, de betanai beitin kach lo ma'ani la kinyan. Bat ishto, de la betanai beitin kach lo ma'ani la kinyan. What? V'chimigra gora? Elabito kiva de betai beitin kachlo v'chayshish chlori atvasa. Toshma, Omar Rabbi Natan, in a Braita, a third reason, not like Rabbi Hanina and not like Ula. Ematai, do we not collect for the peirot and for the watering system? That's dafka bizman shekadam mikcho shel hasheni leshivcho shel harishon. But if kadam shivcho shel harishon lemikcho shel hasheni, kove minechasim meshubadim, alma mishum delo kodimu. True. But it's a machlokes tanoim. The tanyain motzi nachilat peirot uleshevach karkaot ulemazon yishava habanot minechasim meshubadim. Mipnei tikkun olam, lefi she'en ketuvim. Om Rabbi Yossi, what kind of tikkun olam is that? It's because alo en ketuvim. Ma'amotze mitziya alo yishava, om Rabbi Yitzchak, shnei kisim kishurim matzata li, fa'ala om Rabbi, lo matzati al achad. He has to be nishba. Shnei shvarim kishurim matzata li, fa'ala om Rabbi, lo haya al achad. Enu nishba. My time, eh? Shvarim, it's very normal that they should be menatche me'adadi. But kisim don't fight each other, and therefore they're no menachem yadadi. But in a case we said shnei shvarim kshurim matzata, v'ala omar, I did matzati, I gave you back one already, don't you remember? Ichzarti le'achad me'am, then that is a motive of miktaz, and a reza nishba. I don't understand, doesn't Reb Yitzchak call that motzi mitziya lo yishava mibnei tikkun olam? Udi Amak Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Tani Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Pa'amim Shadam Nishbal Tanat Atzmo, Ketzat, Mon Elavi Chabiyadi, Ve'achaltif Pras, Areze Nishba, Ve'zoi Shanishbal Tanat Atzmo, Ve'chachomim Omrim, why? He's just a Meshiv Aveda, and Meshiv Aveda is Potter. And we asked there in Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov that Letle Meshiv Aveda Potter, and Rav explained that it was talking about Betono Katan. And Katan, we ask, Midi Meshashe Yitbe, but Zan Enish Boin Al Tanat Chereshot VeKatan. Well, I don't mean Katan, perhaps. Maybe Rav meant Gadol. Amai Karla Katan, Delegabi Mili Daviv Katanu. So then it's not Tanat Atzmo, then it's Tanat Acherimu. It is Tanat Acherim, but it's Hodat Atzmo. Yeah, I got news for you. Every motive of mikzas, for God's sake, is tanat acherim and motive and hodat atzmo. What's the matter with you? Ella bitter rabba kamiflegedi omar rabba mipnei ma omra teira motive of mikzas atana yishava because chazakash in adam meyispana bifnei baal chovo v'hai really bekulei boilem yichprei. And actually, Bekule then by the Ludele. But I don't know, Ludele is because he doesn't have the cash. So for Ada Avili Zuzu Paranale. So the machlokas over here is in how far we apply Rabbah Svara. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar lo shna bo v'lo shna bivno eino meiz, and therefore he's not a meishiv aveda because there was a tviya. Whereas Rabban and Savri bo deino meiz avo bivno meiz ubinalo meiz meishiv aveda. Since he didn't, he does have the good Samaritan advantage.